Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar Braving the Elements. Hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Each week we'll recap and discuss a new episode.
So come join us and our amazing guests, from creators to cast to superfans, to chat about all things Avatarverse.
It's Fire Nation time. Book of Fire. Let's go. Listen to Avatar Braving the Elements
wherever you get your podcasts.
It. I have had it up to here. You are all going to detention right now, and you must listen to me because I am the headmaster of this deadly cast. My name is Alex.
All right, you've been popping off at your mouths, and we've got ourselves right to trouble, triple trouble, and we got to get down to it. And I don't know, there's some masked men running about, and we got to have a look at them. I'm Justin.
What's up, I'm Pete.
And you are listening to Deadly Cast, a podcast about sci-fi's hit new show, Deadly Class. We are going to recap what's happened on the episodes so far, then talk about the latest episode of the show, Mirror People.
Yeah.
That's right. We are through the mirror here, people. Through the mirror here. So let's get into it. Let's get into Pete's favorite part of the podcast. What do you guys say?
Recap.
So Deadly Class takes place at a secret institution called King's Dominion. It's a school for teenage assassins. It's split into a couple of different social strata, if you will. Some are the legacies. Those are different gangs of every type you can imagine, from neo-Nazi cheerleaders to Asian gangs to, I don't know, what else?
That's all the people.
Yeah, that's basically it. But on the other side of the spectrum is the Rats, the Losers Club, essentially. That is made up of Marcus, who it was rumored that he'd killed 16 people by burning them in an orphanage. Turns out that's not exactly true. We don't know what went on exactly that night, but we do know that a new character called The Fuck, they haven't specifically called him that yet, but I believe that's his name, seems to be the person that perhaps is responsible, or at the least something happened to that guy's face. Before that, though, he wasn't that nice. He liked to have sex with animals, and this episode he likes to have sex with somebody different. We'll get to that in a moment.
Oh, man. Give stuff away in the recap.
I know.
The recap.
Yeah, that's a
pre-cap. We know that people haven't actually watched the episode. They just tune into our podcast to find out what's happening on the show. So I don't want to spoil anything for you guys.
The best way to watch peak television is to hear someone else give their opinion about it. I've never watched a television show. I just listen to others.
Honestly, I just run from apartment to apartment being like, hey, here's what's going on Westworld while you're watching it right now.
That's such a fun.
You would actually love that job.
Regardless of the show. It doesn't matter what show it is. You could be watching Ozark, I tell you what's happening on Westworld.
That would get you murdered in Brooklyn faster than literally any other crime.
That is 100% true. So we mentioned Marcus, we mentioned The Fuck. There's a couple other people in the Losers Club, the Rats of King's Dominion. That includes Saya, who is tasked with keeping track of Marcus and keeping him safe. They share the same fate. That's something that, another spoiler, but we find out specifically from Saya this episode. She tells Marcus all about that. There's also Petra, who's the resident goth. She struck up a little bit of a romance with a guy named Victor, who is basically Drago from Rocky IV.
And you mean Russian?
It's pronounced Drago.
No. But he's like, I think Pete's right. He's basically Ivan Drago, right?
Yep. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Yes, I mean, in that he is Russian.
Sure. Well, don't be rushing to judgment about him this episode, because we certainly learned a lot more, which we'll get into in a moment. Also on the Loser Squad, we got Billy, who has a tall green mohawk. He actually has the cast from the Losers Club, essentially, from It. So that's a pretty nice little Easter egg for you guys. Who else have we got going on? We got a random red shirt named Jaden that we'll find out more about this episode. Not that much more about.
One of my favorite characters, top to bottom.
I love him.
Totally
we got to see him poisoned last episode. this episode, worse stuff happens to him. And yeah. Then there's also Willie, who is a friend of Marcus's. Willie is, you know, he's also there. And there's Maria, who is a little bit of a romantic flirtation of Marcus's, but mostly she is the kept girlfriend of Chico, who is the leader of the, what was it, Saravatos? Is that the name of the gang?
I believe that's correct.
Maybe. Okay. Chico, not a very nice guy. Maria doesn't like him very much, very scared of him, but he holds very tightly to everything going on in the school. Last episode ended in a school dance, which was a big fight. Chico got smacked down. It seemed like the Losers Great Club was ascendant, but we're dealing with some real fallout from that this episode, which we'll get to in a moment as well. And then the other thing you should know is Bryson Posehn is around hanging out in a guy named Shabnam's house, where they had a party. And as we find out this episode, he's still there.
Yeah.
So there you go. I think that's probably everything you need to know going into the episode. The short version of what happened to this episode, there's a couple of tiny little things that you should probably know. Billy went home. We met his dad. His dad is an abusive asshole who happens to also be a cop. He lives in Las Vegas. Billy was trying to protect his family. He got the shit kicked out of him. As we find out at the end of the episode, he is proposing a trip to Vegas where everybody can go kill his dad. You know, very typical
road trip.
That's
very
fun.
Typical road trip. Definitely want to talk about that before the end of our podcast episode and where that's going, because that's some crazy stuff that happens in the comic. And then the other little thing that we should probably know about is Maria, while Chico is out of the school, tries to get out of town. Specifically, she asks Willie for a passport. He gets it for her and passes it to her in a comic book. Always a nice surprise when you get like that thing. Cool. You open up the comic book. There's like a holographic card or a passport or something like that in there.
Yeah.
That's always
I'm a citizen
nice...
of so many countries because of that.
unfortunately, she doesn't make it out because Chico does come back. So that's a real bummer for Maria. Oh, the last thing you should know is the fuck manages to track down Bryson Posehn, who's having a very nice time talking to his mom.
Risky business.
Yeah, about risky business. A lot of Easter eggs, cultural Easter eggs in this episode. But
cultural
Bryson Posehn
Easter eggs.
What?
Isn't everything just a cultural Easter egg?
Yeah, this is a cultural
well,
Easter
on
egg.
This show.
Yeah. It's true. So Bryson Posehn unfortunately ends up being captured by the fuck. Shabnam's parents are also confronted by him, and he wants to know where this school is that Marcus is going to. So we're going to have to deal with that pretty soon as well. But yeah, the bulk of the episode is
well,
this
one thing
show.
I just wanted to say real quick, Bryson Posehn is please. Treated like a human dog.
No, he's the gimp.
Well, I don't know. He's sort of wearing, he's got a collar and he's sitting in like a dog pose. He's like a human sexual dog.
Well, what kind of dog, Justin?
It could be any kind of dog. A Pomeranian, poodle.
Yeah, sure.
Well, it starts off with
Pete a poodle. Pete a poodle.
It starts off with him
hashtag
at
Pete
the beginning
the
of the episode, you know, enjoying the fact that he was the only one who stayed at the house party, as you do, you know. You wake up at somebody else's house after a house party, and he risky businesses it.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But I think, to Justin's point, it is interesting that he does end up with a dog, a sex dog. And I wonder if we're going to see that going forward and whether it will turn out to be poodle-like or not. That should be really interesting to follow in the show.
Yeah, super important. Let's keep talking about that part.
Any comments? Let's go around the horn.
Any comments
Pete,
about
any
that?
Any comments on that?
I think that it's one of those things where he had a fun conversation with his mom on the phone about risky business. You know, they kind of talked about the plot. And then, unfortunately, he became the goat fucker's toy. So it's not a good look for
Bryson
Posehn.
No, I don't want to push this too much, but I do want to mention, before we get to the rest of the recap, because we should mention the bulk of the episode. But I thought it was really interesting. One thing I was really struck by with this episode, this show is almost like a cross between, say, a Riverdale, which is a teen murder show, and Preacher. Like, it's very like Preacher, and the sex dog thing is very like Preacher. For those of you who don't watch Preacher, there's the God is actually dressed up in sort of a dog gimp suit, a poodle suit, or a Dalmatian suit, I guess, if you will.
Yeah.
Pete, any comment on that?
I don't know why you would bring that
and
up.
And just to say, we were dancing around it because of some FCC violations we've encountered on our podcast. But Pete spent several years as a human sexual dog, and we covered it extensively in our Preacher podcast. And we just happened to chance upon it in this podcast as well.
It's a complete accident, nothing that we planned in advance or Justin and I talked about off the podcast and discussed at length or anything like that. So, Pete, you okay there?
I thought it was interesting that Brian Posehn was licking his pizza in the beginning of the episode. That's a weird way to eat pizza. I don't know.
I think it was like it was old pizza, right? So he was trying to wet it up a little bit, get it a little softer.
Yeah.
Oh, is that?
Yeah,
is that
that's what I took away from that scene.
It's an old Italian trick for softening pizza.
All right. The bulk of the episode, though, is this show's very clear riff on the Breakfast Club, as everybody involved in the incident at the school dance is taken into detention together. We even get everybody basically dressed up like the characters from the Breakfast Club. Yeah. We get to see Saya doing the zip,
the hoodie
thing.
Yeah, the little hoodie thing.
That's Ali Sheedy, right? Was that Ali Sheedy does it? And then later on, Chico even does the fist bump that Judd Nelson does in the movie. Lots of fun, way more murder, way more deadly. Everybody's kind of trying to feel each other out and figure each other out. Eventually, Petra reveals, hey, I have a way that we can get some supplies because they're supposed to be locked in there for 48 hours. They break into Master Lin, who is the head of King's Dominion.
Valhalla Room.
Valhalla Room, which is where he has all of his contraband that's been confiscated. And they end up having a fun time in there. They do some fun stuff with jumping over spikes on a motorcycle.
Yeah.
They do some boxing. And then it turns out, actually, that Saya's cousins... that was the one thing we forgot to mention for the last episode. The cliffhanger was Saya's picture was sent to somebody at King's Dominion with some money. Turns out this is the gang that she escaped in Tokyo who is coming back to get her. They kill everybody in the safe house in front of King's Dominion. They kill everybody in King's Dominion, and they come in and break in and try to kill all of the kids. That includes the red shirt Jaden, who ends up getting his hand chopped off and then dying.
Oh,
Victor gets his stomach sliced open. Petra gets hooked in the back. It's horrifying.
Oh, man. Yeah, they did that so well. It was so scary.
Yeah, and we'll get back to all this in a moment. Chico ends up escaping. That's how he hooks up with Maria. Meanwhile, Marcus and Saya try to figure out a way out. Saya eventually does get out. Master Lin confronts the two masked men who have stolen Saya. Marcus comes out with a frying pan, knocks them out, basically saves the day. And we end the episode, or before all the other stuff we mentioned, we end the episode with Marcus and Saya sitting and talking on the roof about their futures, kind of touching each other's fingers a little
bit. Pinky touch.
They set up the next kind of movie spoof. You know, they did the Breakfast Club in this one. Next episode's going to be Road Trip.
Yeah, there you go. So there you go. That's an overview of the episode. Let's jump back and talk about the highlights. What jumped out at you guys? What did you like about this episode?
Well, there's a lot of amazing fight sequences for sure.
Yeah.
Also, it's nice to know that when Sia gets bored, she just needs a motorcycle to cheer her up. And then, you know, she forgets about her katana and stuff like that and just has fun.
I thought this was a really great episode for Lana Condor, who plays Saya in particular, because she's basically had to glower and look annoyed most of the time. And here she really got to show her range. She got to laugh and have fun with the motorcycle. She got to be a little bit, that shot with Marcus on the roof was super romantic. That was really nice. And also badass, the fight scenes. I know we were joking about the poodle thing with Preacher before, but I really do think they're on par with the fight scenes in Preacher, which are incredibly well choreographed and totally brutal. That's why it reminded me of it.
I agree.
She really brought it out here.
I mean, I think there was a little bit more comedy in the Preacher fight scenes, but I think they do an amazing job with the fight stuff in here because they have a lot of badass kids and you got different fighting styles. So it's really impressive with what they pull off.
Yeah, I agree. And especially keeping Marcus bad at fighting, but still not dying believably, I think they do that really well. that last fight sequence with the bow. Yeah, I got some dog action here with the bow staff spear dude. That stuff was great.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. All the stuff and the sword fighting as well. I liked
Master Lin's fight sequence. Also amazing.
Yeah, he's great. It's funny. Benedict Wong is so good as an actor, and he's so good as Master Lin. You expect he gets into a situation like he does with those two guys with that have stolen Saya and the diner at the end. But I was actually worried for him. Like, they had killed so many people at that point, I had no idea what was going to happen.
Yeah.
Now, I want to throw something out at you guys. What was going on with the school in this episode? Because, like, I get we were doing a Breakfast Club riff, but they do this whole thing where you can't leave the library, and then they break out of the library pretty easily. They sneak by the monks, which was fun, but then they're driving a motorcycle in the hallway. Where is everybody?
Yeah, I mean, it was weird. It made it seem like everyone goes home on the weekends, which doesn't seem true.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It definitely felt like they were the only kids at the school and everyone else was just off doing something else.
Right. I mean, I think it was a second location, right? Like, that's kind of what I took away from it, because they had the guy who was tracking Saya was standing outside. It seemed to me like he was checking in, following Master Lin, following where they were and finding it out, and then going back. But it was confusing to me because it was still a library. There were still the school hallways. So it seemed to be the same place, but not the same place.
I think Valhalla is soundproof, apparently. I mean, you can rev up motorcycles in Valhalla and nobody hears.
Yeah. I agree. It was a little weird across the board, but I didn't mind. I sort of liked it. It felt like they were in a private little area. The detention sort of was a separate place, and it let them really be in trouble by themselves with no real way out.
Yeah. What else did you guys like? Other highlights of the episode? I certainly wanted to know more about Billy and his dad, because that disappeared for a good chunk, and it seems like we're certainly going to find out going forward.
Oh, yeah, definitely in the next episode for sure.
Yeah.
That's kind of the whole point of the road trip. But I think that, like, for me overall, I really like this whole thing about, you saw Saya with their katana, like, practicing. And then, you know, like, the fact that it was so important to her. Like, it was a crazy episode for her, because she's, started with getting it taken away from her, and then she's fighting to get it back, and then, like, accidentally kills a family member.
Yeah.
And it's like drinking on the rooftop like a badass in the morning watching the sun come up. Oh, she's amazing. Absolutely amazing.
Her.
Yeah, yeah. It's I think she's a fantastic casting choice. She has to do a lot as far as range is concerned, and she pulls it off really well.
Now, if you were dating her and she just had that sword everywhere, would you be intimidated?
No, man, that is just fantastic.
You were talking the other day about those nunchuck laws and how you can carry nunchucks everywhere now.
Yeah, I could carry. If she could bring her katana, I could rock my nunchucks. It would be fantastic.
I'm glad I was able to bring that news to you, Pete, because I look forward to the day when you're just walking the streets with like a 6-foot headband on, trailing off your head, nunchucks, totally shirtless.
Don't fucking tempt me, motherfucker. That's a fantastic idea.
Yeah,
it's too cold for that. It's too cold. You won't look cool all bundled up in a big coat and hat and scarf and everything, just waving your nunchucks.
How did that guy lose all his fingers? Winter nunchucking. Another tragic loss. There's that moment, the moment when Messiah stabs the guy who we find out is her cousin. I thought she stabbed Marcus as well, right through him.
No, she stopped.
Yeah, I agree with you. I thought, not to keep poking too many holes in this, but I thought the staging of that I thought the staging of that was weird, because Marcus was clearly behind it, and I felt like we should have at least seen the sword over his shoulder or something like that.
She didn't run it that far through, guys.
Ran it through the guy and then pushed it even farther. He wasn't that
thick. She went for the second lunge after Marcus was clear.
What?
you know when you're shish kebobbing, you can purposely try to shish kebab or you can aim it away. I think they did a good job coordinating.
Oh, I forgot. Pete does carry around a shish kebab with him in a little sheath everywhere he goes, and he knows exactly how far to push it through the vegetables.
Yeah. This is a fun thing you should know. If you ever meet Pete, the first question he'll ask you is, how thick are you?
Yeah, he's keeping a very meticulous log about everyone's thickness, waiting to see how it's going to come in handy.
Now, one thing I did, we had another animated sequence this episode where we found Petra's origin, which, again, straight out of the comic books. That's exactly how it happens out of the comic books. For those who didn't watch it, what we find out is Victor is lying there basically dying from a gut wound. Petra has been stabbed. She's also not doing that great. And she leans over him and tells him the story of what happened to her, how she ended up coming to the school. And her parents were people of God. One day they kind of turned. They basically became Satan worshippers, devil worshippers, started following the wrong person, disappeared from her life. Garbage started building up everywhere. Her mother started ignoring her. If you read the comic, it gets even more in depth in terms of the whole devil sex cult of it all.
Nice.
Yeah. If you want to read some real fucked up shit, you know what I'm talking about.
With like an instructions.
They did a good job of hinting at it in the animated
stuff. Yeah, but they don't hint at it in the comic book. They just like straight up tell you. Yeah. You know what I'm talking about.
That's good. With instructions on how to form your own version.
Yeah, it's actually, there's no panels in it or anything. It's just an instruction booklet. Oh, and I went to a Satanist meeting.
Ah, nice. How to go. I didn't read a comic more book. Evil. You look a little more evil. Yeah.
Oh, my God. Don't ever do that.
You like that? You like that face, Pete?
Stop.
That's great.
Good for an audio podcast?
Oh, man. That's super creepy, dude.
Anyway, so it ends up with her mom's eyes being severed and her being forced to stare at them in a broken jar. And then it cuts to this beautiful shot straight on of Petra with the same eyes looking directly at Victor. That was pretty haunting, but I had a question for you guys. Clearly,
I got a question as well.
You know where this is going. Victor, very mean to her last episode, but they clearly had some sort of bonding thing this episode. Do you think there's an actual romance sparking there?
No, that was so dumb. It really made me mad the way she like was like, hey, wake up, stay alive. No, let fucking evil Drago bleed the fuck out. Enjoy the peace and quiet. Like, what are you doing trying to save the guy who's been nothing but evil?
Hey, Pete, if he dies, what? He dies.
Oh, right? That's good. Wow. Yeah.
Right? Huh?
Ivan Drago?
Yeah. Yeah. Ivan Drago.
Is that Ivan Drago or a random Russian person?
I honestly don't know.
Oh, come on. Come on.
Pete, you can't let people die. You can't just
let
them die.
Yes, you can. Very easily. If you go to school where they teach you how to kill people, let the evil guy bleed out.
Yeah, but you don't know how evil, like, evil's a pretty loose, shifting concept.
Did you see the last episode and what he did to her?
I'm just saying, Pete, if you have a shifting understanding of what a bad guy is, where's the line?
You're goddamn right I do.
So that's bad. So I feel like I'm stabbed in a room and all of a sudden you're like, hey, shouldn't have brought up that Pete the Poodle stuff that many times. You're dead.
Yeah, exactly. Then maybe you'll fucking learn something.
I won't, because I'll be dead. And I'll say, I regret nothing, you sexual dog.
I think we're building up I blanked on Love Triangle for a second. I wanted to call it a three-way romance. That's not what it's called. Love Triangle.
No, that's more of your sex cult stuff.
I gotta stop reading that manual. That's my main problem. I think we're building up a love triangle between Petra and Victor and Billy, and I'm into it. I'm there for it. Yeah. We talked about this last episode of the podcast, but one thing I think the show is doing really well in between all the death and destruction is building up legitimate human connection between everybody, really digging down on the high school of it all, which I think is great. It'll keep me tuning into the show.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're right, Alex. They do a great job of that in all the episodes. Also, that's why it makes it so nice when they're dropping like references to comic books and stuff like that, because it really helps with their connection and the dialogue. I loved like the Superman Flash race they talked about. you know, they were dissecting movies. I think that's very kind of like high school nerdy kind of conversation, and I love it.
Just in general. Go ahead.
All I was going to say is the only one that felt a little forced to me was the RoboCop discussion. Like, yeah. I don't know. There was something about that that felt a little stagey
to
me.
Oh, that was RoboCop? I thought it was Cyborg.
I think they're talking about RoboCop because they're like, so he half robot, half cop? I don't understand.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. I thought it was Cyborg 2, Pete, actually. And then it was definitely RoboCop. Because I think they say in the end, so he's a robot cop?
Yeah, I guess because Drago was talking, I didn't catch the cop part.
Oh, yeah.
No, you don't speak Russian accent.
Yeah, exactly.
I guess not.
Anything else you want to talk about with the episode? Anything else you particularly liked?
Well, on the high school tip, Justin. Just think the in general, the 80s are just so comforting. Oddly, it's sort of a dystopian decade, which I feels like we're in a worse version of that now. So watching this show is nostalgic and also comforting to me.
Yeah, just the Jolt Cola was, I was like, oh, man.
Yeah.
How do you feel about the 80s, Justin, in particular? Do you have an emotion you'd associate with it?
Things were weird. Everything was very strange. Like Jolt Cola. Remember people were like sort of scared of it. And it was like, don't touch that stuff. And it's like, what? And then it's a soda. So it like.
Yeah. But did you ever ride the cheese dragon?
I don't know exactly what you mean. You mean from the Pop Rocks and the cheese from the episode?
Yeah. That was her homemade Mountain Fizzle
Dew,
Rocks.
Pop Rocks and cheese.
Yeah.
Homemade Fizzle Rocks is what that was.
That's nice. That's good. But yeah, the 80s were great for all of the weird shit that was being made. And I feel like so much of our culture, our like entertainment culture, is spun out of the interesting parts of the 80s.
Yeah, I like your deeper answer, but I was hoping you were going to say, I love the 80s. So I don't know.
Yeah. Nice. And last episode, Lady in Red. Great track. I'm on board for the three-way romance. The isosceles love session.
I did like how we got a Maria and Willie kind of moment in the episode. I thought that was really cool. And then when we didn't get any Billy, but then at the end he kind of explains, because Marcus is like, oh man, you missed it. And then he can tell by Billy's face, it was like, oh shit, he got beat the fuck up. So I have to sit here and listen to the story and then cry.
His monologue, Billy, I'm forgetting the name of the actor who plays him. That was so good. That was so well performed at the end of the episode. Again, not to keep talking about the emotion of it, but he really infused every moment of that and made it very human. And to have that in the middle of an assassin school where his suggestion is, let's go kill my dad in Vegas, it still feels very real across the board. And I would credit that both to the writers and to the actors as well. I think they're doing a very good job.
And to have him just tell the story as opposed to like seeing flashbacks or even doing it as an animated sequence or something, I thought was such an interesting choice. And really on the actor to be like, hey, make this awesome. It's the end of the episode.
I was really happy with the performance and the writing for sure. But I was just like so exhausted from what we just been through. It went right into that story. I kind of wanted a comical beat or something just to kind of like give me a fresh start for this new story. Because I just felt like, holy shit, we just survived. We got back to your dorm room. And then we got hit in the face with that where I was like, I kind of needed a minute, you know. Where Marcus was kind of like, oh, man, you missed it. I kind of wanted that little beat. Mm-hmm. And then for him to be like, well, actually, what happened to me? Just because I just felt like it was like so much stuff in one episode, which I loved. But it was also like right on top of each other.
Well, but I'd say, and we've talked about this quite a bit on our live show, Comic Book Club, that's very true to Rick Remender, right? Like, that's what his comics are like, that every single issue you're like, wow, that's the most fucked up thing that's happened. Hopefully next issue, everything will get better, and then it definitely doesn't. It gets so much worse.
It does not. Worse.
Yeah. So,
also,
all I was going to say is, that I've done a little reading in terms of how involved he was behind the scenes, and the answer is insanely involved, that as far as everybody said, this is Rick Remender's show. Like, beyond even being the showrunner and beyond being a on-set showrunner, which some showrunners are like, oh, I'll just give, you know, a pass on the script and we'll see what happens.
I'll work like, from home today.
Yeah, exactly. He is involved in every single aspect of it. And I think that shows it exactly what you're pointing out, Pete, which is that things are not going to get better for anybody here. They're just going to amp up and amp up and amp up and get progressively worse over the course of the series.
Do you know how I knew that Rick Remender had a huge hand in this project? When the main character is talking about how suffering is the only thing, the only constant in life.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, this is Rick Remender's baby right here. Rick Remender is raising this child, and he has a lot of control over what's going on.
Well, I think the thing that's interesting, though, to specifically point out that and those conversations that they have where they're all very disaffected teens – I think in the middle of all that, and we've seen this over the course of these first couple of episodes, they want something more. Like they do.
Yeah,
like they say
impressive.
On the surface, oh, no, life is pain. Oh, we have no futures ahead of us. But still, they want to make a connection with each other. They want love. They want to get out of this life in some way, every single one of them. And I think that's an interesting dichotomy that they're playing with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, it's definitely, these episodes are a lot of fun, man. It is just nonstop. It's kind of that Riverdale, holy shit, holy shit, holy shit, you know.
Well, and it's also, it's a little different. It is like Riverdale in that way, but it's different as well in that it's not just like so much plot. And it's sort of nice they let the scenes get to breathe a little bit. It seems like so far, every episode has been like, here's the one thing we're doing in this episode, and we're running all of our storylines and character moves underneath that. So we don't have to, it's not about like, wait, oh, he's with her, he's doing this. It's more like, oh, I see how the emotional chess game is sort of happening in between these two characters.
Yeah, I think they're doing a really good job of figuring out what you need to do at the beginning of a show, which is A, set up the world, which they do in the first episode. Then B, set up the rules of the world, which they've been doing over these first couple of episodes very well before this road trip, I think. But C, what they've been doing is mixing around the characters. It's very much about Marcus. Marcus is the center of the show. He's the Harry Potter of King's Dominion. But they are taking time to, like we talked about, put Maria together with Willie, which is not something that I would have necessarily thought about on the surface, or figure out beyond Victor being the mean popular guy and Petra being the lonely goth girl. How do they actually work together? What happens when they're forced together? So it's funny to see the Breakfast Club episode this soon in the run, but I actually think in retrospect, it makes a lot of sense because it gave them a chance to dig deeper into the characters and how they feel in different situations.
Yeah.
Also, I would say it's more Marcus is in a Hufflepuff because they're the rats, like kind of out on the roof there. But I also like how even though that they're like having these like great moments, they're still very true to who the characters are, which is great. They don't change the character to make Drago more likable. They keep him an asshole, but they still have these powerful moments. Especially when I couldn't believe that Chico like found that secret exit out. And I was like, oh, don't make Chico a good person now because he's going to tell everybody, hey, guys, I found the way out. No, he just dipped. And I thought that was such a great thing to have. Like, Chico kind of helped them, but then really fucked them when he locked the door and like stayed true to who he is. And like, oh man, it's such an emotional roller coaster. And they do such a great job with all the characters.
Yeah. Now I'll mention before we start to wrap up here with the Vegas episode next week. In the comic,
Vegas baby.
In the comics, I don't think this is too much of a spoiler or a surprise. They go to Vegas and basically trip balls the entire time, and it's the most hallucinogenic thing you've ever seen in a comic book. And I've seen a couple of pictures Rick Remender and I think Wes Craig have posted a couple of things online. They're keeping it very true to the comic book in terms of the visuals.
Oh,
like,
boy.
I believe they drop acid and then essentially end up like in a claymation world. So it's going to be
very cool.
Nuts. I'm very excited to check it out.
So are you guys going to drop acid before you watch the episode?
100%. Yeah. Anytime I'm watching a show, I do what the characters do and just see how my life changes.
Yeah, that's why I watch Westworld.
Yeah, yeah. No, I got you. To have sex with all the robots around your house.
Yeah, well, mostly.
Oh, sorry, I should say not robots, Roombas.
Yeah, vacuum cleaners.
Yeah.
I don't know, Roomba.
You know, oh, cool. Well, sorry, yeah, big up to you as a Roomba owner.
Vacuum cleaners, refrigerators, clock radios, whatever I can find, honestly.
Yeah, your devil sex cult is more of an appliance fuck around.
Yeah, it's more getting my dick shocked. you know what I'm talking about. You guys know what I'm talking about.
It's right? Great to see, be able to, because we're doing this on Skype, to see Pete's disappointment. And not just have to assume it silently there. It's great to see it.
Yeah. Before we wrap up, superlatives for the episode. Let's give out some superlatives to everybody. I'll start, just to give you guys a little bit of a chance here.
We don't need time.
Petra is most likely to have her mother's eyes. That's what I'd say. How about that?
Come on, man.
That's definitely true. Most likely to crush it on American Gladiators. That's the crew in the Valhalla room, because they had those pugil sticks out. And I love that shit.
Yeah, Marcus and Chico. Yeah. Taking it to each other, being kind of friendly in a weird way.
They would crush in the Eliminator. I would love to see an episode, season two, the Assassin Kids go on and become American Gladiators.
That's definitely what's going
to
happen.
I think Maria wins most likely to get really close to freedom and then take her time and then get caught.
That's cool. Just you recounting what happened. I mean, Alex did the same thing.
I was really disappointed that she didn't take the passport and run. Don't go back to your room.
Don't you pack anything?
No. Chico's a fucking evil-ass dude. If you're going to run, run.
Yeah, but she thought he was going to be gone for 2 more days.
Yeah, she had some time. So, like, Pete, when you go on vacation, do you just, like, run out of work on the last day and just go right to wherever you're going?
I wish, but if I was running from someone like Chico, you wouldn't fucking see me. I'd be out.
I have one more superlative. Most likely most likely thing to be worn during an assassination, those fucking masks. What were those masks ever made for? Because it's in every piece of pop culture content, it's just dudes killing other dudes.
Yeah. Well, they're devil sex cult masks, so... But they're used mostly for killing.
Oh, wow. What a studious answer.
Yeah. No, I don't know.
Cool.
I don't know what they are. All right, guys, before we wrap up, please support us, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. at the People's Improv Theater Loft in New York. Come on by. We'll chat with you about Deadly Class. Pete, what else do you want to plug?
Friend us on Facebook so you get to know about the amazing guests we have on our live show.
Follow us on Twitter at Comic Book Live.
Check us out at comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and more. Also, you can follow us at Cast Deadly on Twitter for specific Deadly Cast and Deadly Class specific content. And we'll see you outside of detention. Goodbye.
Finish your mayo.
Time bomb, high school. It's time. Ready for a career in behavioral health? Earn your online degree at Herzing University. Choose from health and human services, psychology, or social work programs. Gain the skills to work, coordinate, and manage nonprofits. Secure a bachelor's in psychology to study mental health or advance your social work career through our online Masters of Social Work. Let us help you become a social change agent. Your future starts now at Herzing University. Text HEALTH to 85109. That's HEALTH to 85109. Or visit herzing.edu.